And we will endeavor to understand what has passed and imagine what is to come.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. Now, here is your host, Millennial Woes.
Hello, and welcome back to Millennial 2025. I am now here with Stefan Korte. Now, he appeared on Millennial once before. Let me just, I think it was maybe 22 or 23.
23 it was. Hello.
Yeah, 23. All right, so welcome back to the show, and we're going to talk about the AFD, and well, first we'll introduce you, then we'll ask about the AFD, and then we'll talk about your project. So, Stefan, please introduce yourself to the audience.
All right, so, well, I'm with the AFD since 10 years. I've been working as a, what is the English word? It starts again. Very well.
Advisor.
As an advisor, exactly. Thank you very much. Yeah, I didn't have a lot of time speaking English the last weeks. So I've been an advisor in the Federal Parliament for 5 years. I've been elected to the City Council and to the local council last year. I did write a book in 2023. About geopolitical upheaval in Eastern Europe. Now I've been working since a couple of months on my own project, because I had a little enlightenment after 10 years of politics.
Okay, well, we'll get to that later. Sounds interesting. It seems to me that the AFD is doing very well in Germany and is going from strength to strength. I've heard about the cordon sanitaire. Eugippius has written about this on Substack and talked about it on Twitter. All of the other parties teaming up to ensure that the AFD can't get into, can't get power. And yet it just seems to keep getting stronger and stronger. What would you say about the AFD and the general political situation in Germany over the last year or so?
Well, I mean, all the other parties already trying since years to stop us from becoming bigger, and it is already the same procedure as every year, so to say. They always unite against us. So there's nothing new about that. The only new thing about it is that they're not succeeding anymore as it was before, because people in Germany, they start to realize that that politics is indeed a rotten business, and it is really, really even for the AFD difficult to convince people just by political phrases. But I think people also realize, especially in Germany, of course, that there's only one solution, the patriotic parties all over Europe. We see them grow everywhere in Europe, which is a good thing. That's the point. I think the people are realizing that that there's only one way out.
Yeah, it seems like the situation is getting worse and worse, and the German public are losing confidence in the mainstream parties to do anything about it, and so they're looking for a radical option. Of course, it's been said before that the Germans have a capacity for radical politics that the British don't have. The British are very dull politically.
Okay, you have a different electoral system, so that is also difficult to get in charge.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, but there's just this mistrust among the British of anything unusual. And either way, the political system keeps out anything radical. But with the Germans, there does seem to be I think for many years, for decades, they've gone for very dull politicians. I remember someone once told me that German politics is like the characters, the personalities are very boring people. They're not interesting. They don't have ideas. But the German public clearly have they want something radical now. I think they've tired of the dull men.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we look around in Europe, I think we have everywhere the same problem. The politicians are dull. I would even say they're rather stupid. In a mean way, I'd say, because sometimes you have to ask yourself the question: is it really stupidity, or are they following a greater goal? Yeah. For example, but the people in Germany, they are fed up with empty words, and now it's up to the AfD to really, keep the word and see if one day when we get in charge, we really have to settle things for the best.
And a previous guest of mine on Millennial said that. His name is Shlomo, that's his YouTube comedy handle. He said that there's a debate going on in the AfD just now about whether to go more mainstream in order to get secure power at the next election in 2 years' time, or whether to stay the course, keep on the current ideas, and you won't win in the next election, but you'll win in the one after that. Is that true? What would you say?
Well, I haven't heard about this discussion, but I would say this would be a discussion which is in vain, because I think we have to continue kicking ass, because it's what the people expect. I mean, it is nonsense if we're just now when we see that we are growing in numbers. We are at 27% at the moment. That means 3% in front of the governmental party, CDU. And why should we stop being exactly what we are today? From my personal opinion, I think we should be even more direct in certain things, because the situation, the political situation in Germany is really, as a citizen, I would say it's unbearable. But as you said already in I think it was in your prologue, that same things are going on in the UK, governmental wise, but also regarding the economy, regarding our social structures, our society, and it's unbearable anymore. And I think the only way forward is to say it straightforward, and to say we have to stop this before Europe is, before Europe disappears as we know it.
Yeah, yeah, it's literally that serious. It's not just a matter of the economy or something like that. It's everything.
Yeah.
Is part of the, I mean, where does the AfD stand on, for example, nuclear power?
Oh, we love
because I know that. Right, good. Okay, good. Because it seems that this is a critical thing. Germany is going to have to deindustrialize if it can't get cheap energy, and then that means that that would be a huge change for Germany, the entire country, the entire society. So. Obviously, nuclear power is the solution. I'm glad that, but I know that it takes about 10, 15 years to actually build a nuclear power plant, so it's not something that could happen soon. That's obviously something that's, so that's the sane path forward. So, would you think that the AfD will win at the next election, or do you think that it's still going to be the next one from that?
Well, the problem is that, as you just already said, that all the other parties, they are uniting against us. And in Germany, unfortunately, you need 50 point something to have the majority, of course. In Austria, it's a bit less. I was informed about that because I was also a bit confused about it. But it is easy because of the electoral system. You can gain the majority with 48% or something like that. Anyway, that is the big problem. Whenever we reach something like 40%, of course, 27 is the more at the moment we're at 27, and let's be really generous and we reach the 35. What does it mean? It means that the CDU, the SPD, maybe even with the Greens and the left, they're trying to create something which will never last a whole legislative period, but they will just do something to stop us from govern this country. But it is a good question. I mean, of course, we will be the strongest party in 2029. There's no doubt about that. But if we are able to fulfill our duty to rule this country and to lead Germany into a better future, well, that is something that needs to be shown.
Yeah. Of course, in the meantime, there's also the threat of the state, the German state, well, the other parties working against you, but also the German state itself working against the AfD by banning it. I think you told me the last time you were on that wasn't a realistic prospect because it's so difficult to do something to mm-hmm. actually ban a party. But I know that there's been a resurgence in that idea. I think there's one particular, I can't remember who he is, but the name, but there's a particular guy in Germany who is looking to ban the AfD. Do you think that that is still just not going to happen?
Still not going to happen. No, but it's just way too complicated to ban the AfD just because someone thinks that we are far right or radicals or whatever. The problem is this. I call it the Nazi clutch. Yeah, the club. Not the clutch, the club, the Nazi club, because it's everybody's using this against us. You are a Nazi, you are a Nazi, we are all Nazis, just because we tell the truth. And this is what the system can't stand anymore, the truth, everywhere. And that's the reason why they are trying to ban us. That's why their reason they keep us out of certain certain committees and so on and so forth. But still... they will never succeed in banning the AfD, not without violating the law. Well, and if that happens, well, then of course they can do it, they can force it, they can do it by force. But I'm not exactly sure that this would be healthy for the society.
Certainly not. It seems that their options are very limited. They can't really do anything. All they can do is that the parties group up against the AfD and try to keep it out. But then that makes them look terrible. I mean, it must look... The German public must be disgusted by that because it's the political parties basically trying to stop them from getting what they want.
Well, it depends. I mean, some are disgusted. Some say, yeah, do it, because they're all Nazis. But then again, we see this shift. And of course, the success of the AfD started in the eastern part of Germany. And the east part of Germany is absolutely blue at that point, except for Leipzig, which was always a leftist city. But then again, now we have this blue disease that is spreading towards the West. And we have results in Bavaria, over 20, the poll says something like over 20%, like also in Lower Saxony. So I think Even we didn't expect that to happen that quickly, but the people in the western part of Germany are also waking up, so to say. They realize that, all right, I mean, see for yourself, the people in the east, they had just 30 years of this, I call it turbo capitalism, or call it whatever you like to, but it was not democracy in its the way the people from the east once believed in. They say, all right, this is the reason why we go out on the streets in the GDR for free speech, for freedom. This is not what they get. But then again, the people in the west part of Germany, they had it for over 60 years. All this manipulation, the 68 movement, yeah, which was really devastating for our educational system, for example, but also for certain aspects in our society, like values. But we're talking about values probably later on. But this is something that people start to realize, and I think this is the reason why we grow quicker than expected.
And it must also, I imagine that German society is visibly changing very rapidly, especially after 2015. And according to the beliefs of the establishment and all of those mainstream parties, there's nothing that you can really do to stop that. In fact, you should do everything to accelerate it.
That's what we do.
Because, yeah.
But look around. I mean, it is not about Germany. It is about Europe. It is about the fact that Europe is, if we don't do anything, Europe will disappear as we know it. Our values, our heritage, our culture, everything that made Europe great will disappear if we don't do anything, something. Yeah. That is something that people have to realize, and it is not any kind of threat or horror scenario. It is the bloody truth. This is going to happen, and I think that makes people change their mind more quicker if they realize that. But then again, we have a lot of people in Germany that are still so absolutely brainwashed that they don't realize what is really happening, and they still support illegal migrants, and they still don't care if a German or if a German gets stabbed by a migrant, then it's just a fatal accident. It was an accident because he was traumatized. That is always the storytelling. The narrative, but it isn't. There are people who do not belong in our society, end of the story, because they can't adapt. They don't want to adapt. They don't want to integrate. And where is the law that says we have to be tolerant to someone who's not accepting our way of life here in Europe? I don't see that.
Yeah, of course. And then the left will say, well, what is our way of life? We don't have a way of life. It's just whatever, all of that rubbish. And that is the trickery that I think the general public in Germany and elsewhere are now seeing through, that, well, we actually did have a way of life, and we need to have a way of life. We can't just have chaos. It's not fun. It's not fun to go to the Christmas market knowing that you might be, you know, killed. It's just not. It's not a way that anyone wants to live or to raise their children. I don't know. When I was a child, Christmas and Christmas markets were innocent. It was safe. It was there was no question of something like that happening. It was just completely impossible. And now, German parents have to raise their children with an awareness of these dangers. I mean, and then you've got all the rapes of German women by migrants that are going on all across the country. Again, that now has to be, you know, daily life is changing and has been changed by this. I still remember the one in Freiburg where it was some political, the girl, she was raped and killed and dumped in the river. And then her parents were political. And I can't remember what they were. They were involved with the politics of the city of Freiburg. And then I think they came out and said something like, the stereotypical stuff that we mustn't.
We don't want this to be political. It was just an accident, or it was something. I mean, and there you see how extremely brainwashed these people are. That even at that moment, in that particular moment, they don't realize that something's wrong with this society.
Yeah, it's terrible. I was in Freiburg just around the time that happened. I can't remember if it was before or after. And it was such a beautiful city. And it was so awful to think of, well, yeah, that happening there. But of course, it's happened everywhere. It's happened all over Germany. I mean, yes. And I remember...
Not everywhere.
Yeah.
Well, it's not happening in that amount... In the eastern part of Germany. And if something like this happens in the east part of Germany, then it will always find it in Berlin. In Berlin, very rarely in Dresden, yeah, Leipzig. But everything in the provinces, yeah, nothing like this will happen. Yeah. And I made a habit of calling Amazon every time they sent me a delivery person who's not speaking German. I complain every time because I'm fed up. It's just a simple example, but they don't care about the fact that old people here in a village like I'm living in, they don't speak English. So why do they have to change? Why do they have to adapt to people who come here working? And when I ask these people, do you speak German? No German, no. So why should I speak English with you? I mean, there's no reason, not in front of my gate. But this is also something that they are trying to implement a certain idea that I have to speak English. On my bloody village here. No way. I will not.
And I saw this when I was in Germany, that you would see a poster, an advert on the wall or something, and it would be in English. And it was so strange.
Yeah.
I saw it also in the Netherlands. And it's not right. It's terrible.
This German society which we live in today, it is strange. There are so many strange things. And every time I come to England or wherever, and whenever I speak with the people from the US or from England, and I tell them what we call the cell phone, it is ridiculous. I mean, we call it a handy. Come on, that's really something where I say I'm disgusted, actually, because who was the moron who invented that? Who had this brilliant idea to call a mobile, a cell phone or whatever, or simply a phone, a handy? Well, it might come handy, but, well, that's all, isn't it?
Yeah, I've heard about this.
Dull.
Yeah. I've heard about this, that Germany is importing words from English that, I think the word shitstorm, for example, is actually
most of the time not with sense. That's the problem. I mean, they can adapt things like, okay, let's talk about marketing, We use the word marketing as well, in the correct sense,
right?
But some people have this strange idea to import English words where they don't belong, just from the sense, like handy.
And yeah.
That is a little bit wacko.
Yeah, it is. It is. It's a strange thing. But I think, and I've said this on other streams this millennial, that young people especially are just watching so much of YouTube and TikTok. So it's internet. It actually is a sort of global culture that's developing. And I don't like it. But I don't know if it's, I don't know if you can stop it. I don't know how you would stop it. because turn people are going switch. To watch what they want to watch. So, sorry?
Turn the kill switch of the internet.
Yeah.
I know what you're talking about, and I have it firsthand here at home with my 15-year-old stepdaughter, which is driving me crazy because there is every time she's using her cell or her phone, and she has it in front of her nose, and it seems like it's grown to her face already, and. And when I tell her what I did when I was in her age, she's just looking at me like I'm a dinosaur or something like that. How can you just simply go out, have fun with your friends, go do something outside, bicycling or building any kind of thing in the woods or whatever? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's talk a bit more about the AFD and elections, and I've got this graph here. This was from 2025, and so the AFD is the blue one, dark blue, and what we can see is that with the age groups, it's quite interesting. Basically the old, the 70 plus, are the only ones who don't seem to like the AFD, and then the And then also you could say the 18 to 24 are less keen on them than everyone else. But from 25 to 40, about 50, 25 to 50, that seems to be the most popular group. I find this interesting. I don't know if you would have any remarks to say about this.
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Well, first of all, between 18 and 24... In Brandenburg, for example, you are allowed to vote from the age of 16. From the age of 16 to 18, we have the highest amount of voters. So we lead this graph. I mean, we have like 30 or 35% of young people really supporting the AFD. That is one thing, but the other thing is the 70 plus. Unfortunately, that is true because when I was campaigning last year, and I walked 158 kilometers, spreading my flyers and doing stuff in the city and here in the district. I always tried to talk with people, and it was always the old ones. They were simply just scared because they believe what it is said in the news, yeah, and that is the big problem because the news, they tell them we are the new fascists, we are the new national socialists, and that is what scares them, especially of course in the East because they were all socialized in a socialistic way. And so they don't want to be ruled by fascists. And these people don't understand that there is another, that there is a different or another truth, the real truth that the news agencies and that the mainstream media is not supporting. So that's the reason why this age group 70 plus. Is really, really difficult to reach.
Yeah, there's one other graph that I'll show here, this one. It's basically the same. Well, this was projected share, but it's a different way to look at this. And you can see the blue is obviously the important one. What you're referring to there is the old people. Basically, we are talking about the boomers, and it's a small problem. I mean, it's not a huge. I don't want to exaggerate it because half of it's 10%, but it's 20-25% in the other age groups. So it's not a huge thing, but it is interesting. It's notable that it's still the old. It's the boomers who are holding this back. But it's, I don't want to concentrate too much on them. The other interesting thing here is 21% for the 18 to 24 group. So that's the group who are at university or who have just come out of university. But it seems that very shortly after that, they start choosing AFD more, like from age 25 onwards. I think it's interesting. I don't know if you would have anything to say about that.
Yes, it is. But the thing is, we all know that the universities are left breeding grounds, and they try everything to manipulate their students in a certain way. So that, for example, if you want to study classical music or art or stuff like that, this whole areas, they are just simply taken over by leftists. So if you are a patriot and you want to study stuff like that, you're going to have a tough time. the schools in general, I mean, that's why I said it's important to see that they can already vote from the age of 16, and that is important to know, because there is a huge or higher amount of young people than these 21%, which are already supporting the AFD, which is definitely very important, because they are moving on, becoming the, let's say, the pillars of the society, hopefully. Anyway.
Yeah. Is it also worth saying that the young are more, that there's going to be a tendency for them to vote AFD, because they are in the thick of it. They see the state of German society. They have to live with the
yes,
most
of
recent
course.
Immigrants.
They see what's going on, and that's the thing they see in schools already. The students see what's happening in school, like violence and also rape or assault and stuff like that. But this is the thing I observed, because I once talked with a professor about it, who was in sociology, or however you say that in English. Oh. Anyway, he said that the younger generations, especially also the younger generations of the migrants, when the first generation still had a high respect towards Germans and towards Germany, it reduced itself already with the second generation. But they were still focusing on identifying with the country, or also trying to become a real part of it, like working or becoming an entrepreneur and stuff like that. But the third generation, in particular, they are going back to their own roots. So, of course, this is exactly what we see with the migrants and with the young Turks or whatever. But exactly this is also happening with our young generation. They are also going back to their roots. They feel that there is something more than for being German, or they are interested in, and even my daughter is in, I see what she learns in school, and it is ridiculous. But whenever, I mean, I have a little library with a bit more than 400 something books, and we always take some time, and she grabs a book and we talk about it, and yeah, she's interested. She's interested in history. She's interested in what happened, the Second World War, First World War, what was it all about? And she's not even scared of her national colors. And that is something that is really changing, because young people usually They got indoctrinated. They got been told in schools that it is bad to show your national colors. You shouldn't wear your flag and blah 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 and so on and so forth. And of course, I mean, this was one of the first things I re-manipulated. Let's say my place is full of. And when I go for to England or sell my book, I always have my national flag with me, and it is something that I wear on my I don't know what you call this in English on my suit, the little button I have.
A badge or a brooch.
Yeah. And this is something that really changes the way you feel for your country. The moment you are trying to let these things in your life, for example, your national flag, or you see that history is not 12 years of National Socialism. German history is much, much, much more than that. And when you see, okay, when you listen to classical music, and you explain this to children, it's interesting that they are interested, because what they've been told in school or what they've been taught in school. I don't know how to define that, but and I don't want to be rude, but it's a huge pile of shit what they learn in school. It's amazing.
I can't even imagine what it must be like. Are they being encouraged to go for like gangster rap rather than Beethoven, that sort of thing?
Exactly, something like that. Yes. But I mean, when I see what they learn in German class, yeah, when they're going to read a book, it's not Goethe, it's not Schiller, it's not Nietzsche would be too hard, but anyway, it is something from which is born from a deranged left brain. And you can, the moment you start to read just the first few sentences, and you know, all right, that is complete bollocks, complete nonsense. But they have to read it, they have to go through with it, and of course, it makes something with your mind. But then again, you can, and I'm doing everything I can to just simply turn this back, re-manipulate, I always say. To show them how massive our culture is, and that's the reason why I think culture is the answer, not
yes.
politics.
Yes, yeah, because that's what people are attached to. That's what gives people a sense of themselves and a sense of
you
their
have
history
to reattach
and what they come from and so on. Absolutely. In Britain, every few years, there's some news story about some academic who has said that Shakespeare shouldn't be taught in school anymore, and it should be some black writer from the 70s or from the 90s, some Marxist, and that's what children should be reading, not some irrelevant, dead old white man. I don't know how much actually
takes
hold.
It's not the biggest problem that he's dead, but the biggest problem is that he's white.
Oh, absolutely. That's the problem. I don't know how much this takes hold in British schools. There was a lot of Shakespeare in my education, and I didn't have an elite education. But we did three Shakespeare plays in great depth. And that's something I'm very grateful for. I'm really very glad that I got that, because I think if I'd gone to the same school 10 years later, I wouldn't have. Although I don't know, but everything I hear is that it's just going downhill all the time. And specifically about that, specifically about the in English, the literature that they're encouraged to to read, what they're pushed towards. It's modern stuff. It's multi-culti stuff. It's global homo stuff. It's anything that is not from before 1950. So just dreadful, absolutely dreadful.
Yeah, they're trying to implement this LGBTQ gender nonsense everywhere, and I mean it's like early sexualization they do with children in the kindergarten. They have these brilliant ideas of creating rooms where they can touch themselves so they can explore themselves in that age. It's absolutely amazing. And the fact is that these are all green and left ideas, and specifically green ideas, which is, yeah, where's the difference? I mean,
yeah, what
is the result if you mix up red and green?
The result brown, is
brown, indeed.
Yeah. Well, somebody asked earlier in the chat, what is D-Linker? And that is that's not the Green Party, is it? That's left.
No, but the left one. So,
yeah, far left. I mean, they're all left, but that's the extreme left one.
Bigger difference. I mean, well, what you have with the far left, the radical left, because everything else is left, there's no difference between the SPD or the left or Die Linke, and their SR is in fact the Antifa, yeah. So they are their radical wing, I mean, there's no need to talk with these people because they're
insane.
They have no brain. I was about to say, but. The same.
Practically, yeah, they're practically speaking, they're insane. And I don't think they're literally insane, but practically they are. So anyway, there were a few questions about AFD support between men and women. It seems pretty obvious that it's going to be mostly, that it's going to be stronger with men. What would you say?
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, some say the AFD is a male party, but that is a bit of an exaggeration. But of course, there are more men in the party and more men active within the party than women. But I think it is not really about or being green or being left to say, okay, we need a quotum or a quorum of women so that we are all equal. No, I think the basic approach is who's capable, who's willing. That's all. If it is male or female, it doesn't matter. I mean, as long as it is not somewhere in between, right?
Yeah. And then there was another question. Oh, yeah, someone pointed out that the voting statistics the graph that we showed earlier, someone pointed out that if it was only ethnic Germans, traditional Germans, then these numbers would look, there'd be even more support for the AFD. I think that's an interesting point because we've seen similar things in Britain where the vote is changing because of the demographics.
Yeah,
but I don't know if you want to go into that.
But you would be surprised how many first generation and second generation Turks are voting for the AFD because they say, all right, we don't want these migrants here in Germany as well, which is also interesting. But of course, that's the reason why they are trying to get the migrants to change the law so that they are allowed to vote. Because of course they vote for the SPD, they vote for those who got them into the country, and of course not for the AFD. But the old ones, the first and second generation, there are quite a few foreigners and people with the German passport that are voting for the AFD. Interestingly,
yeah, yeah. And then somebody also asked about, to return to the boomer question. Someone said, do a lot of boomers assume that the AfD is too pro-Russia for them?
Oh, yeah, sure, of course.
All right, so that's a problem.
I think, well, we have two streams. Yeah, we have, of course, the pro-Russian stream in the AfD, and we have the pro-NATO stream in the AfD. But it is like in every other party as well. And the difference is that our people can choose for themselves, and there's no order from any kind of party leader that says, okay, you have to be pro-NATO or you have to be pro-Russian. So it is, of course, something that the people are deciding for themselves. What I actually criticize is that these people do forget that they should first and foremost be pro-German. Yeah. I wrote a book about all this nonsense that's going on in Eastern Europe now. And I wrote it from a German perspective, from a German point of view. And my German point of view says, why do we get involved in that? Why do we spend billions of taxpayers' money without their permission? Why do we cut off our best economical and ties with Russia just because someone else actually said so? And so on and so on and so on. So, yeah.
Of course, the big thing would be the Nord Stream pipeline, but maybe you don't
want to get into that. I was about to mention it, but I think it is obvious.
Yeah, exactly. All right,
about the Nord Stream, because I can't hold myself. And now everybody is still looking in one or the other direction, but then there is this great deal makers called Donald Trump, I think. He comes up with great ideas, making lots of deals for the benefit of the USA, of course, not for Europe or any other country, not even for the Ukraine, which suffered widely. But anyway, their idea is to buy Nord Stream 2, to get their hands on Nord Stream 2, repair it, and sell Russian gas to Germany for a higher price. Well, I think what people in Germany really don't understand, if I would be in charge, I would say, hello, this is German property. Get your freaking hands off it. What the fuck are you thinking? I mean, these are things where I ask myself the question, who's really still sane? In politics, especially.
Absolutely. When I saw German politicians celebrating the destruction of the Nord Stream pipeline or the damage to it, it just seemed like this is absolute clown world. This is crazy. You're celebrating something that's going to damage your own country's economy.
Extremely.
Very seriously damage it. This is mental. All right. So I guess I'll ask you more, some super chats about the AfD afterwards. We'll get back to that. But for now, let's move on to your own project, U-Turn. Please introduce that to people, and then we can talk about how it started and what you're doing with it.
Sure. It is quite, it's not quite complicated, but I gave it a lot of thought in the last year. And as I told you, when I came up with 10 years of being in politics, and I figured out that I can have the brightest political ideas, and it would still not make at least not the difference that is needed to change things for the better in the country or to take charge in government. And so I asked myself, what is it? What is really the problem with the people? And as we already discussed, I think the problem is that they are detached of their identity, that they are derooted, that they have no roots anymore, and they don't actually know why is it necessary to be patriotic? Why is it necessary to be German or to be English and to be proud of your country and all these things? And of course, these people, they don't know. And as you said, there was even a Turkish parliamentarian from the Green Party that once said, Germany has no culture except for the language. And I mean, these people are in our highest parliament and they can say stuff like that. So in fact, U-turn for Europe is the simple idea of U-turn for Europe is to give people back their roots, to show them how great our history and our identity is, and not only for Germany, but for Europe. Because as we already discussed, it is not a problem that is only focused on Germany. It is a problem that every country in Europe, maybe except for Hungary or Poland, has, that they are losing the grip, or they lost already their attachment to their own identity. And I think the way to give it back to the people is to create, for example, musical plays that are focused on patriotic ideas, that show the people how vast and with which immense quality, or what immense quality classical composers do have, like Bach, Mozart, and others, or Vivaldi, to be European, to go to Italian, to Italy. The thing is that what these people, and you have to be aware, and I think everybody knows somehow that there must be something to it, because why is it that the governments and the structures like Soros Foundation and others, everybody's trying to get us away from our identities, to get us away from our heritage, so that they say, okay, the folk songs, so this is ridiculous, we don't need that stuff anymore. Yeah, like we need some gangster rap or stuff like that, which is more important. And because they know that culture is our strongest, is our most potent weapon we have. Because whenever I'm absolutely convinced about the fact that it's because I feel the way, because it's, I'm, let's say, how do you say it in English? I realized it myself. I experienced it myself. Because I grew up in the western part of Germany. I've been in a school where the 68 movement already took its toll. And step by step, I took everything back that they took away from me, like my identity. I figured out that whenever I heard, I was listening to Bach, I was listening to poems of Schiller, and I read Goethe and all this stuff. And I, at this moment, when you sing your national anthem and you heard about the stories of your forefathers and so on and so forth, you are way more open for soaking up even more of these things. And what happens is that you are more resistant. You become more resistant to manipulation. The moment you embrace your identity, the moment you embrace your roots, the heritage of your forefathers, you suddenly become someone else, definitely someone else, someone who's capable of withstanding the manipulation that is taking place everywhere in Europe. And they are taking away, as I said, not only German heritage, not only German identity. It started with it after the war, with the re-education of the Allied forces, and then we had the 68 movement. But now it's happening everywhere. They want to take away the European identity, and that's why I think it is not time for a U-turn for Germany. It is a time for a U-turn for Europe, because this is what we need. We have to protect our heritage all over Europe. Our identity is ours, and it has to stay ours. Yeah. So that was my problem.
I agree. Because no matter what we did in the past, we don't deserve to go extinct now. That's the thing. People talk about the British Empire and the Atlantic slave trade and the Belgian Congo, etc. Well, the Belgian Congo, first of all, there's a debate to be had about that. But let's assume that it's all true. That doesn't mean that Belgium today should be destroyed. And
that is absolutely true. Yeah, but then again, who were the last slave drivers? Who was the last slave traders? It wasn't us Europeans.
No.
Was the Arab?
The who?
The Arabs, the Muslims.
Oh yes, exactly. They were trading and I believe it's still going on
in Africa.
Yes, yeah, all of that. And I believe it still goes on today in here and there, but it's not white people doing it. And then the British Empire. Look, I mean, no matter how bad the British Empire was, and I don't believe it was that bad, but let's assume it was really bad. That still doesn't mean that some English girl today in Telford deserves to get gang raped by Pakistanis, or that we should be replaced by Pakistanis. So, in a way, it just doesn't matter how bad our past is, or they can argue it.
I am convinced they are exaggerating things on purpose just to make us feel bad, and they are succeeding with it with all these brainwashed people that already lost their detachment to their own history. Yeah, but if you have just a spark of it left, you can be. Yes, let's say you can be rescued from this path down to hell.
Just a spark of it. And that's why they're so paranoid about it. That's why they try to crush it at every opportunity. Detaching us from our literary history is part of that. Diluting and changing our language is another part of it. And of course, replacing us demographically, making it harder and harder for us to even maintain our culture today, from day to day, is another part of it.
Yes, so that's, all the of reason, this, yeah. That's the reason why I said that remigration. I mean, I don't know, you didn't have the time to see my speech at the TBG, I suppose. But that was one thing that was important for me to say there. Remigration is not an option. It is an absolute necessity. There's no way around it. And the other thing I was bold to say is that remigration is one thing, but we also have to talk about our ethnical preservation. Because if everybody's talking about their own ethnical interest, the only people that are not doing it is us. It is us, the white people. So we are not allowed to do that. So we have to accept our extinction because someone was bad, and we don't know how bad it was. They were, but someone tells us that we have to accept our
extinction our ultimately. Extinction. And the thing you said earlier is interesting, that Once you embrace your identity and your heritage, that gives you protection against manipulation. I think this is a very good point, because without your heritage and identity, you're just a person, and you've got to think about principles and morals and other groups. But once you belong to a group, then that becomes the touchstone. That becomes the priority. And then the principles and morals can be weighed against that priority. So yeah, I want to do this. I believe in the principle of whatever. But my group has to survive. My group has to come first. And that principle, that project, whatever, would work against my group's survival. So, and the thing is, that is what every other group is doing. They weigh everything in terms of, well, is it good for our group? Is it suicidal for our group? Then we're not interested.
Except if you are a member of the EU.
Sorry, what did you say?
Except if you are a member of the EU or a member state.
Oh, yeah.
Because otherwise you can't explain their politics at this point. Yeah, exactly.
It's the EU, I think that has completely failed. I don't actually think it will exist for much longer. I think it will be maybe another 20 years, and I don't think the EU is going to exist anymore. No, not even even shorter.
The moment Germany leaves, the moment the AfD is in charge, and we already said that there's no, we don't see any possibility to, reconstruct it or rearrange the EU in a way that it is in benefit for the people and for the national states. So that means we decide to leave the EU. And in that moment, Dexit. It is the Dexit, and the Dexit is, how do you say that, the last necessary nail for the coffin of the EU.
Yeah, the death knell. That would be it. The EU couldn't possibly go on. I mean, then it would just be France and Italy is actually
a net contributor to the EU. The depths of France, and then let's see how long they can hold on. But I mean, exactly. Germany is also very deep in depth, but still our. GDP is a bit better than the one of France or Italy or any other country. But the problem is that the politics in Germany and the politicians, the people who are in charge, they fuck it up so badly that our economy is really going down the drain. But we are still holding on better than some others. So imagine. A government that is really focused on the benefit of the people and the benefit of their own country, focused on economical, rearrangements constructing new economical ties, bringing back cheap gas, bringing back cheap energy so that our industry is capable of producing goods again for a good price, so to say, because I mean, when my first BMW was half the price of what you have to pay today, even if 40,000 German marks now would be 20,000 euros. You will never ever get a certain car for 20,000 euros anymore. But now you have to pay 40,000, 45,000 euros for the car that I once bought in an equivalent for 40,000 marks. So there you see, it is all going in a way completely bonkers, because people can't afford that anymore. Because these people are, most of the times, they are leased or they are on a how do you say that, financed, yeah? Nobody is capable anymore of buying a car from the normal people.
And this is even a problem in America. So Trump has been talking about 15-year car loans. It's amazing.
That's amazing.
Is there anything else you'd like to say about U-Turn before we go to the super chats?
Okay. Well, of course, there are lots of things to say. And I think everybody who's interested in really getting to know the project in more detail is very welcome to check out our website, which is www.uturnforeurope.com. We are already planning a musical play. We are going on tour next year with this musical play, which is called Ode to Europe. And we are also planning a value or conference of values, which will take place in Vienna on the 11th and 12th of April next year. Several nations will be talking about their own personal view on how values are declining in Europe. And then we're going to see if we can find common goals, common ideas in how to protect our European values and our virtues. And we also have another conference in the planning. It will be a security conference because, my field of expertise is geopolitics, and I have. That is also one thing that was important for me. The establishment of U-Turn for Europe, it is not a German structure. Of course, it was my idea, but my idea also was to bring people from Europe together. So that means the people that that founded these associations are coming from all over Europe, which makes it definitely a European project. And for that, we also think that, we have a general that is taking part of it, and that's the reason why we want to have a security conference, because we think that all this, what is happening in Ukraine, and all what is actually happening in the EU, with the ideas that that these people like Merz and Macron and all the others have, even though that Trump is just trying to make a deal for the US, but still he's on a path to peace. And when we see what is going on with the EU, they are actually on the path of escalation. I think it is very important that we get a broader audience for the people that we first of all show that Europeans in general, even patriotics, especially patriotics can work together, can establish new structures, can really work towards peace, and see and show them that it is absolutely necessary to start to communicate again, because this is something that's not happening anymore. There is no real communication between Russia and between Europe. I was in Minsk at the security conference, and comment on that. I've seen Sergei Lavrov live. I've seen the president of Belarus, Lukashenko, live. I've been talking with lots of people from the foreign ministries of several countries there. And I've never experienced anyone who was really actually offensive or hostile towards Europe, because they all see themselves as a part of Europe still. And they still want to be... they want to cooperate. But what we are forgetting is to really talk with the people on equal footing. And that is not happening anymore. We are just blaming Russia all the time for everything. We are trying to create hostilities, like Poland likes to do things like that. But we're not coming together anymore, speaking about these things. And our little conference might, at least because we want to do it most probably in Lithuania, very close to Belarus, and also of course to the Ukraine. Let's see if the system is accepting our offer, or if they want to try to cancel us like they already tried when we had extremely difficulties going to Belarus.
Right, right. Yeah, I agree. This is a very important thing because it seems that the establishment is trying to prepare, lay the ground for a war with Russia. And this seems completely insane because I don't think that we have the military capability to withstand a war with Russia. Britain or Germany or any other European country. So I just... It just seems insane. I mean, we're looking at an establishment, whether it's a German politician celebrating the Nord Stream bombing or British politicians bussing in asylum seekers to hotels, or it's EU politicians trying to prepare war with Russia. We're looking at an establishment that just seems to be completely unfit for purpose and, well, poised against the European peoples.
It is ridiculous. I mean, just a couple of in the last few weeks, I wrote two articles which were released on the Forum of for Democracy, and I think this is it is quite obvious, especially in my last article, the West's double agenda. I think at least I think I've seen a pattern there, because every time someone is talking about peace, every time Trump is trying to do anything in that direction, or some negotiations might went quite well, there's always someone from the European part, but also from the American part, from the US part, like for example the thing with General Donoghue, who said, yeah, we can destroy, and the word was destroy, Kaliningrad faster than ever before. Or there was this German general who said, okay, Russia could attack already tomorrow. Or there was this German general who said, all right, we are supporting long-range missiles. We're going to finance long-range missiles for the Ukraine. Or the Italian general who said, okay, we should maybe think about a preemptive strike, and so on and so on. So when you sum this up, you say, from a Russian point of view, you have to ask yourself, because what are they doing? Are they schizophrenic? I mean, on one hand, they want to have peace. They want to try to find a solution for the problem, but on the other hand, everything they do, at least verbally, is escalating. It is rather odd.
Yeah, and yeah, exactly. And from the point of view of the Russians, yeah, it must look quite worrying. So they won't know what is coming their way. So yeah, I think all of this is just grossly irresponsible on the part of the European elites, and basically, they need to be swept out of power one way or another, in every country, because they are endangering us in every way, economically, demographically, and militarily. It's just crazy. It really does seem like an elite that has outlived its that has run its course and is now just not just corrupt but incompetent, grossly incompetent.
Yeah, that's the question. Grossly incompetent, or is there an agenda? Is there an agenda to really destroy Europe, to get rid of the last 4 to maybe 6% of the rest of Europe? I mean, they had the first World War, to be quite successful in reducing the white people, the Europeans. They had the Second World War. Yeah, that was also, if you look at it from a geopolitical point of view, you can't simply say, oh yeah, the Germans, it's all the Germans' fault. No, it wasn't. Anyway, you see, two big world wars which took place in Europe. And now what is left? So now what they are trying, at least from my personal perspective, trying to get rid of the rest. And if they can't just simply kill them, I mean, they are trying to, but then again, produce a gray, homogene mass, stupid, afraid, and easy to handle. But don't call them, take away their national identity, take away their cultural heritage, and then what's left of Europe? Nothing. And then you have your Muslim, the Muslims, yeah? They take over. They're everywhere. They just say it openly. We're going to take over. One day we're going to take over. Small kids, yeah, with a big mouth. Well, what's not, it's not your country anymore. Go fuck yourself. Thank you very much. Nope. This is not what I... This is not Germany's future, at least as long as we can't do anything against it. And I think that's the reason why we say it's not only not Germany's future, but it shouldn't be Europe's future.
I couldn't agree more. And I think that this is very serious. This is not a game. We're talking about something that's going to affect the world for thousands of years to come. And nothing could be more important than this. And I really do think that these are the stakes now. Absolutely. As you say, we're only 7 or 8% of the global population now. Another war would destroy the young white male population. So then we know what would happen then. And it would be an allergy future.
They already established a new draft system in Germany. Yeah. And that is something where you say, all right, if you don't do this, if you don't have anything planned, yeah, it all goes in the same direction. Everything they do goes into the direction of escalating things. I mean, first it was Poland who said they are going to have the biggest army in Europe, yeah, ordering 1,000 tanks from Korea, 500 mass launches from the US, and so on and so on and so on. And now it is Merz, our chancellor, when you call that, if you can call him like that. Anyway, he says now it's his turn. He wants to have the largest army in Europe. So it's like a challenge. Who's first? Who's going to have the biggest army first? But then in the end, if this is the problem, that they don't know the Russian mentality. If Russia sees, or if it can foresee that they can't win the war, and if they are, yeah, it's like with a wild animal. If you corner it, they will use nuclear weapons. Not strategic ones, but tactical ones, for sure. And it is obvious. And there's no winner in this war. And it absolutely makes no sense. Because when you talk with the people on equal footing, like I did in Minsk, there is no need for a war. Not at all. But then again, you have to check out what led to this war in the Ukraine. And it is all, at least if you listen to the mainstream media, it's all the fault of the Russians. But then again, it was James Baker who said, together with Hans-Dietrich Genscher, the German foreign minister, not an inch, Mr. Gorbachev, not an inch regarding the eastward expansion of NATO. So what? They lied, obviously. Or was it all just because you can't deny the membership of NATO to any other state, because they all had the bright idea to become a member state just by themselves. There was no pushing, of course not. No, the US did not push any country to become a member of NATO, especially not the Baltic states. just by telling them, okay, we can protect you. Be careful, the Russians will come back, and especially the communists. The problem of the Russians was they were not talking enough back in these days. They should have been talking more with their neighbors and saying, all right, let's start from scratch. Let's do some not aggression pacts and whatsoever. But they didn't do that. But that was the advantage of the US. But okay, we're drifting off.
All right. It's all worth talking about, though. It's all interesting and it's all necessary. And this stuff has to be discussed. It's crucial. But more immediately for Germany is the AfD. So, all right, let's get to the super chats. The Thin Red Line has asked a very basic but necessary question. Where do the AfD stand on remigration?
On remigration? Well, I think, the AfD itself still says remigration is absolutely necessary. And I think it will not change. Because if they would, that would be a huge uprising within the party. But then again, of course, because the question has to have a background, there was a person like Maximilian Krah, who started suddenly to also attack Martin Zellner, because he said remigration, we shouldn't talk about remigration anymore. We should involve all the people from foreign countries in Germany and try to make something up with that. But he was also quite rude towards Martin, and I was also very, very much surprised. But then again, I knew that would be the case just already 2 years ago because of certain reasons.
Yeah. Okay. And so, broadly speaking, the AfD is very pro
remigration.
Yeah. Okay. The Wanderer asks, what is the, we dealt with this before, but I'll ask it again. What's the likelihood of the German state coming down with the banhammer and neutering the AfD? We've seen the UK taking away jury trials, and I wonder what bag of tricks await Germans for 2026.
Well,
censorship, oppression.
This structure we have in Germany, which is called Amt für Verfassungsschutz, the protection of the constitution. but they are guided by the Ministry of Internal Affairs, so they are not neutral. They get told what they have to do by the Ministry on Foreign Affairs on Internal Affairs, so it is a bit of an issue. So everything they say, you can be sure that it is constructed. It is only working for the people who have no attachment to their nationality, who are brainwashed, who love what mainstream media comes up with, but these people are getting less and less, fewer and fewer, and no, 2026 will have nothing, no big surprise in that regard. The only surprises I think would be the ones the AfD comes up by themselves.
Right. Okay. Good. Because in Britain, we are worrying about this. You know, what is the state going to do to us next? And it's a big irony, you know, because in Britain, Germany is talked about like, the Germans have this authoritarian streak. They're given to censorship and punishing people. But we here in Britain, we believe in freedom of speech. We are really up for freedom of speech, and we hate an overbearing state. Well, That is, I think, a complete delusion. Maybe it used to be true, but I think in this day and age, Britain is at least as heavy-handed and censorious as Germany. And indeed, the hate speech offence is... The online hate speech stuff is already a huge thing. I mean, I think I saw 15,000 arrests for online hate speech. I can't remember the number, but it was huge. And far more than you would think. And now with the Online Safety Act coming into force, it'll be even more. So I don't think that the Brits have anything to be snug about here.
In that regard.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Britain is worse.
Because, I think so too.
I've seen a lot and I've heard a lot of these things, like blaming people for terrorism because of certain things on their phone. I mean, come on, this is private property. Whatever I have on my phone is my personal thing, and they come up with terrorism. I mean, that is extreme. I would say for a country that loves the freedom of speech, that is impressive.
Yeah, it is. I saw it's 12,000 as reported by the Times, but also apparently, according to the UK Parliament, the British police are making more than 30 arrests every single day for online offensive messages. Astonishing. Okay. And well, the Thin Red Line asks, where do the AfD stand on war with Russia? We've sort of dealt with that. Is there anything else you'd want to say there?
The AfD is no warmongering party at all. We still think that we have to have peace in Europe, and the AfD wants negotiations with Russia. They want to talk with Russia on equal footing, as I already mentioned. And everything else does not make sense. And what I also already wrote in my book in 2023 is that Germany should get into the position and into the idea of a certain foreign policy, which was already, let's say, not invented, but created by Bismarck. He already knew that it is absolutely necessary to integrate Russia into the security structures of Europe. There is no security. There is no peace if you don't involve Russia in these structures. And I don't know why it is so complicated for these so-called leaders of the nations in these days to understand something like that. If this old fella from the German Empire already had the idea
150 years ago. Anyway, okay. And then there was another one from The Wanderer. Nietzsche described self-overcoming, Selbstüberwindung. I hope that I've probably terribly mispronounced that.
Oh, well, all right. I did get it.
Okay. I hope the discourse that Nick Fuentes has fired up in the Anglosphere finds its way into Germany. Well, I hope it finds its way to Britain, frankly.
Right, I hope it finds its way to Europe, yeah, to every nation in this lovely continent. And I think it was Kemal Atatürk who once said that there's only one civilization on this planet, and it is the European one. So I think we can focus on something like that and say, right, we are not the evil of this planet. We are actually the people, the nations, the civilization that created society the way we know it. And if it is the industrialization, if it is the Enlightenment or whatever it is, it has the origin in Europe.
Yeah.
And why should we be I don't know. I mean, and we are acting like we are trespassers. We are acting like we are criminals, and we have to be careful. We have to be sneaky. No. There's no reason for that. Yeah, we can be proud of what we achieved here in Europe, and with all our nations. And that is what we are going to show the people again with U-Turn for Europe, for every nation, because every nation has to realize that it is worth fighting for, and every nation has to realize that we have to fight together to protect Europe from vanishing.
Yes, we do. I mean, the time for brother wars is just over. We don't have time. We can't do that now.
No, we can't afford it, and we shouldn't have done it in the first place.
Yeah.
But someone obviously had the interest in leading things into or directing things into a certain direction.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, the Wanderer asks, what would you say about the likelihood of Prussia being restored? Also, are you more a Wittelbach or a Hohenzollern man?
Wittelsbach oder Hohenzollern, okay. Also Preußen. Well, I could be sneaky, and I could ask, who was it who actually said Russia is not allowed to exist anymore? Was it again? Come again? I think it was the British, wasn't it? But then again, I ask myself, all right, let's talk about people's law. Let's talk about all the things that were obviously not very important in these days, because they didn't give a fuck. Yeah? Britons didn't give a fuck. The US didn't give a fuck. Nobody actually didn't give a fuck about people's law, which is actually an international law, right? But obviously, it doesn't count for the people or for the nation that loses a war. Even though there was the 1907, I think, Hague War Order, not no idea how it is called in English, Haager Landkriegsordnung in German. Which said, actually, you can't take countries. Yeah, you can't take the soil of a country and give it to someone else or take it for yourself. But nobody really cared anymore.
No.
So, but no. Yes, go back to the question. I think nothing is impossible. Especially if the Polish really fuck it up and start a war with Russia, because they really love to do so, at least when you see how they act towards Russia. Well, if we have to build up Europe again after a war, yeah, then we should do it, because Prussians never give up. They always say, all right, we twice built up Germany again from ruins. So, let's do it a third time. Three times the charm, they say. Do they?
Okay. And again, the Wanderer. I have an aunt who lives in Germany and is a testament to how gaslit the people are. She complains of endless migrants pushing prams in the street, whilst at the same time is terrified at the prospect of Germany lurching right. This mindset has to go. And yes, she is a boomer. So this is the thing about how they'll complain about migration, but are terrified of actually doing anything about migration.
Yeah, and don't vote for the AfD. That is impossible in that regard. Yeah. Complaining about migrants but not voting for the AfD. So what?
Yeah.
Complete insane.
It's just silly. And I do think a lot of people have to get over these feelings.
But it is unfortunately strange.
Yeah. Would you say that many of Germany's, this is another quite wild question. Do you think that many of Germany's problems would disappear with the restoration of the Kaiser?
Well, maybe we should. Well, it is more complicated for Germany, I think, than with Austria. Maybe. Just a couple of weeks ago, I had the privilege and the opportunity to meet the grandson of Franz Ferdinand, of the Austrian emperor, who got shot in Sarajevo. And he's a very, very kind person. And he also spoke at the TBG, so I can recommend it to anyone who would like to see his speech. At the moment, you can also check out my speech there. Anyway, I think the problem is you need some monarch who's really down to earth, really wants to serve his people, who's not really doing it for his own interest, and so on and so forth. And that's, I think, Leo von Hohenberg would be a person like that when I got to know him. But I don't think that would be something that would happen quickly or, but yes, maybe it could change things for the better, because then suddenly someone who's in charge decides and can decide very quickly if a parliamentarian or if someone in the foreign office or wherever has to go because he's not doing his job properly in the interest of the country and the people. So yeah, maybe it could be the solution for our problems, but it's a complicated process.
Yeah, it's a nice idea, and I would love it to happen, but not practical just now.
We still have some people from Hanover over there at your side of the pond.
We'll see what can be arranged.
I mean, you can keep them because I haven't heard lots of good things from them lately. Anyway, that was another story.
All right. Anti-Matoid. We've talked about this, but here we go. What is the AfD's view on the Nord Stream pipeline attack?
Well, of course, it was... It should be investigated. It should be absolutely clear who really did that. But I went a step further, because I can't remember that the AfD said it, but I said it because I think it was an act of war towards Germany and also towards Russia, because it is an essential infrastructure that got hit, that got destroyed, and it had an impact on our economy and our society. So from that point of view, it was an act of war. But our lousy, lame governments we had, I mean, like the one with the Baerbock, yeah, and the one we have now, they're just simply plain stupid in that regard. They would never. They are two options. They are too afraid to go and ask straightforward that question, or they are not allowed from. They have a prohibition. No, how do you say that? They are
prohibited. Yeah.
Yeah, and or. They are plain stupid. It's either purpose or stupidity, but there's nothing in between.
All Okay. And then there's another, an interesting question. What has been the impact of Britain's withdrawal from the EU among the remaining member states a decade on from the vote in 2016? I think that's an interesting question.
Yes, but simple to answer. Germany has to pay more and didn't receive enough the adequate seats. Yeah. So France, for example, and other countries received more seats, even though Germany had to pay more than all the others. So it was a fair game.
Okay. I think also he probably means in terms of morale and confidence about the project since Britain left. Has that been a bit of a bummer for the rest of them?
Oh, well, I think
has it given them a sense of doubt about the project?
Well, the people who were already in doubt or were skeptical towards the EU, they just got their push, their approval, and other people which are on the other side, they were just simply offended. By the fact, how dare they to leave the EU? Why are they doing that? I mean, I don't think that there was a lot of change, mentality speaking, that someone suddenly got the idea, oh, it might be good to leave the EU, because it wasn't explained properly why they left. Was just simply the typical mainstream media reports, and with that you really can't make up your mind as a citizen. You just get pushed towards a certain direction. I don't think that it had any impact on the people. I mean, like, they were the ones saying, "Great, we should be next." And they were the ones that, oh my goodness, how dare they?
Right. Okay, that's that's an interesting perspective. I didn't know that there hadn't been reporting of why Britain left. But it really is the reasons are obvious. It's the same reasons that everyone else would want to leave.
It was about money. I mean, if you say... or if you give if you explain something like this to the German people, they say, all right, they don't want to pay, but well, we are paying as well. Why shouldn't they? Why they should support? They should be more loyal to the European cause. Blah blah blah, and so on and so forth. But you see, the people they don't. They will never really, they are not capable of understanding the real reasons, because they believe that everything that comes from the mainstream media and from these networks, these are facts. Like the AfD is a Nazi party or fascist party or whatever. So why should they think otherwise regarding the Brexit?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. A lot of people just take it for granted. But I do think that those people are fewer and fewer nowadays. And Brexit is 10 years ago. You know, it's important to remember that. I think a lot of people, it still feels sort of recent. It feels like 5 years ago, but it's not. It's a whole decade, and things have changed all over the place. I should say I've just received an email from my next guest, Paul Weston, and he's saying he's got the flu, so he can't make it.
Oh, dear.
It's, too bad. It's a real shame. I'm just writing the email to reply to him now, and I'm saying I hope we can arrange something for the future. My best wishes for your recovery. All the best. And so that's a shame, but it gives you and me a bit more time.
it looks like it.
Yeah. So, okay, that takes off some pressure. It's too bad, though. I was looking forward to that, because he and I've known of him for nearly 20 years, actually, and never spoken to him. So it would have been good, but there we go. Sorry, everyone. Mm. All right. I mean, that's just kind of the...
Sorry, people.
One
no,
of the dangers. One of the dangers of arranging something like this in the winter is that people will get the flu.
Well, I mean, anyway, you have my sincerest respect to what you're actually doing, because it's a marathon talk with four people. I think it's four, right?
Yes, four each night. Yeah.
Hours every day. Yeah, you should be a politician.
Yeah, I'm too honest.
Yeah, that is my problem as well.
Too naive. Yeah, I can tell. Okay. So then the thin red line, he alludes to this. Okay, in our groups, people talk about a division inside the AFD between a moderate wing in the West and the more nationalistic wing in the East. Is this division real? And if so, do you think it could lead to a fracture of the party?
Well, it was worse a couple of years ago when we had a division in the East, which was called Der Flügel, the wing. And we had a more, let's say, down-to-earth structure in the West. But and there were some difficulties, but it was also the problem that some of these, how do you say it, what is it? These institutions in Germany, which are following us, and they of course had or used this as an opportunity to prove that we are of course right wing and we are extremists, because of course this national wing was more patriotic, more direct in its ways, in its approaches. But then again, there was no proof, at least if you really look at it from a neutral point of view, there was never a proof that they were extremist or that there were any kind of structure created in that regard. But the wing dissolved, and now at least officially, we don't have any kind of structure like that, not in one way or the other. Then I think it is better like that, because it shows, actually it should support the unity of the party and of the members, because we are all going in the same directions, and not trying to approach it in one way or in the other. It never led to any kind of real fracture within the party. So no, it wouldn't have an effect.
Good. It seems like there's a driving sense of purpose in the AFD, because many times I've heard about potential fractures and even real fractures where some people have broken off, and yet the party just keeps going and keeps getting stronger. So it's great, because this is the sort of thing that people worry about, because it could lead to the whole project just falling apart and losing direction. But that doesn't ever seem to happen with the AFD. So this is one of the reasons I have such faith in it.
Yeah, but we were talking about honesty just a couple of seconds ago. And honesty means that you have to be at least that, that humble to say, all right, it is not all our doing. Yeah. To say it just simply, the other parties, they are so awfully bad in whatever they are doing. Even if we wouldn't do anything, if we wouldn't say anything, We would grow in numbers. We would grow in the polls because we are not as stupid as the other parties. So this is also something that needs to be known. Of course, we are doing our job. Of course, there are many people in the federal parliament, in the provincial parliaments, or like me in the local parliaments, like district council or city council. We are all doing our job, at least, I think, the best we can. And that means, of course, and the focus is on supporting the interests of the people, trying to explain to the people what is really going on, what kind of politics is actually necessary to change things for the better. But then again, when I give you the example from a local point of view, as I wrote you earlier, I'm the chairman of the financial committee in our city. And the problem is, how can I do politics at that level? And what can I tell the people when the big problems are, of course, also located on a local level, because we don't have any money anymore for certain projects to maintain roads or other things. But then again, the main problem is that there's no money coming from up there, yeah, from the provincial parliaments or from the federal parliament, and this is something sometimes quite difficult to explain to the people, because they just see their small island in front of their nose, but they don't see the big picture, but. We all are doing our job, of course. But then again, being honest means the others are really, really bad. So we could actually do nothing and win the election. We do nothing wrong. Yeah, that is the important thing.
Yeah, yeah. Well, with anything involving people, you know, their human frailty. It comes in, and yeah, it's always possible that there'll be some scandal or mistake made or whatever. That's you'd think it would be easy not to, but it's not, because people are fallible. People are like this. But nonetheless, as I said, the AFD seems to be very resilient. This is why I have faith in it. This is why I think there's a lot is going to happen in Germany with the AFD and because of the AFD. And I don't know whether it will be, you know, the rescuing of Germany. Maybe that will take a bit a longer process, but I think the AFD is going to play a big part in it.
Yeah, but the important thing is that you have to realize, as I said early in the explanation, also for the project, we need a certain amount of people, like the critical mass, to really change things, to initiate a paradigma change or whatever you call that. And that would be 50%, 50.01% of the voters. That is an enormous amount of that is an enormous problem, because as I said, the people are still way too scared. They don't have any idea why they should vote for the AFD, because they lack an identity. They lack proudness towards their own country. There are so many reasons not to vote for the AFD. And people are really eager to find them. And that's why I think we will only get this critical mass if we are capable of giving the people back their dignity, explaining them what it is that is necessary to use virtues anymore. We're talking about values, we are talking about virtues, but the fact is that we are not using them. And and let's be honest once more, how many times we act strange sometimes towards people, and then we ask ourselves the question, oh, was it right? Was it correct? And also within our party, there are people who are just focused on their own benefit. They're not doing it for the country. They are not doing it for Germany or for the German people. They are doing it because they want to be deputies. And this is these are the people we don't need within our party. Actually, we should be more strict handling these kinds of people, because they are destroying the idea of the AfD if this gets out of hand, which I hope we'll never get.
In any center of power, and a political party is a center of power even when it's not in office, you will attract sociopaths. You will attract people who are self-interested and interested in power just for its own sake. And they are the ones who mess things up, who sabotage other people, betray the project, undermine it for personal gain. They're a terrible hazard, terrible danger to have around. And yet, they can also be very useful because they're ruthless. So they can do things that other people, they can be more efficient. But you've got to keep them under very, very strict control. That's the thing.
That's too dangerous.
I think they're everywhere.
From my perspective, and I've seen a lot of things within in the last 10 years. I would definitely say let's get rid of them, because ruthlessness, is it really necessary to be ruthless? Or maybe we should even change our approach regarding certain behavior and politics completely. I mean, let's talk about values, and when we talk about values, we have to say, okay, Platon, Aristoteles, Socrates, and all these 2,300 years ago, they explicitly said, if you don't have the highest ethnical definition, you should not be allowed to lead a democracy. Because every time you do something like that, you will end up that people are creating laws that no one else understands anymore, that keeps them into power, and so on and so forth. And it is already 2,300 years ago. But we haven't learned jack shit, nothing.
It keeps happening. These rhythms keep playing out.
Yes, and exactly that's why I think we have to have a different approach. Because every time we're doing the same mistakes, every time, and it's like, my goodness, I mean, 30, 35 years ago, oh yes, I fucked things up for myself. I really did lots of mistakes because I was young, because I didn't know it better. But if I would do the same mistakes today, I would simply shoot myself. Because I haven't learned anything. But this is the approach we have to think of. If a couple of thousand years ago, people were already capable of understanding that there needs to be a certain approach, and people need to have a certain mindset and a certain ethical standard and so on and so forth, why is it possible to do it today? And why didn't we learn from history, from recent history? No, we do the same mistakes again. Look, and let's jump back for a moment to geopolitics. If we take a look, what really was the Ukrainian war started, and what happened just right after the outbreak of the war in Istanbul, and what your former Prime Minister Boris Johnson said to Zelensky, it's 100% 100% 1939 oh, you shouldn't listen to any kind of approach, any kind of offer. We support you, whatever comes. Yeah, we're gonna do this, we're gonna do that. And in the end, the Ukrainians got beat up by the Russians, like some other nation did just over 80 years ago. As long as we don't learn from that, as long as we have still people in politics who are just following instructions or a certain agenda without really thinking about the people. They got elected by the people, but they don't give a fuck about the people. That is the problem.
Yeah. I couldn't agree more. And it disgusted me when I heard about what Boris Johnson had done there. And basically he was ensuring or doing what he could to ensure that this war would go on and more people would get killed pointlessly. Because they're never going to win. And that's what I've said. Like, I kept quiet initially because I didn't know anything about Ukraine and Russia and geopolitics. But eventually it became clear to me that there's no way that the Ukrainians can win this. And that doesn't mean that I'm against Ukraine. It's just obvious that they're not going to win it. So what's actually going to happen is that their young male population is just going to get steadily wiped out. And that's exactly what's happened. And I didn't want that to happen, but it was predictable. So, yeah, it's terrible to see that playing out. And anyone could have seen it, and I think everyone did see it coming. And but they wanted it to happen anyway for whatever reasons. Okay, and then one final question, and this is from Anti Matoid. It's a completely different topic, but I think it will appeal to you. He asks, who is the greatest German composer? Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, Wagner, or Stockhausen? Karlheinz Stockhausen, who I know about because I read, I think, 3 books about Kraftwerk, and they were influenced by Stockhausen. But anyway, so of those options, Bach, Beethoven, Brahms, Wagner, or Stockhausen.
Okay, now you broke up. Your picture, your picture froze. I have a good friend who lives in Vienna, who is a violinist for over 37 years of his life, and he's of course brilliant. And he favors Bach, and whenever I have the opportunity, he plays. And and now we are gone, are we?
I can hear you and see you.
All right, now I can see myself again, but you're still frozen. But I can hear you.
All right, okay. Keep going.
To make a short story long, no, a long story short, Bach.
Right, okay. Yeah, that seems to be the consensus.
It's a bit tricky, but I like a lot of things of Beethoven as well, so.
Right, okay. So that seems to be the consensus that Bach is the greatest of them all. And yet Mozart and Beethoven are, I think, more famous. They're more commonly spoken of and mentioned. I don't know why that is. But yeah, people who are into this are really experts, and it seemed to converge on Bach as being the greatest. I'm just a layman. I'm just an amateur, so I'm not going to comment. Okay, well, that's all the super chats. So, yeah, we've gone a bit over time, but that's fine because the next guest can't show up. So now I'll have a short break and I'll have something to eat. And, well, actually, not a short break, an hour and a half. So, yeah. Anyway.
Yeah, you deserve it.
Okay. All right, thank you. Okay, so I'll be back then with the next guest, who I believe is Prosopa. Yes, Prosopa Insights at midnight in Britain. And in the meantime, Stefan, it's been great to catch up and get an update on what's happening with Germany and the AfD and your own project U-Turn for Europe. I linked it in the chat. Please have a look at that, everyone. And I wish you the best of luck with it.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Take care. All right. Okay. I'll be back soon. In the meantime, thanks for appearing on Millennial 2025.
Thank you. Bye.
We hope you're enjoying Millennial. How about helping your tireless host? There are many ways to make a cash donation. Find all of these at millennial.com/donate. Millennial amounts to 3 months of work for the vile vlogger. Please help him to keep the fire burning.